So I did a recording yesterday with a new gentleman that was introduced by a mutual friend, Ralph, and he has a real passion for helping youth pastors learn how to disciple young people. And
how young?
Probably teenagers, I'm guessing, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I was wondering, do you have any words of wisdom, suggestion on, I mean, when we got to thinking about it and talking about it, we did our first recorded session yesterday, but when we got to thinking about it and talking about it, it's like, yeah, we want a program to help youth pastors, you know, disciple youth. But really what's probably needed is instruction, direction, tools, resources, I don't know, something to just help really parents disciple, you know, their kids. And so do you have any words of wisdom for, I guess, just discipleship in general or with youth?
Well, I find that there's always been a big problem with youth pastors in the church, because they typically are people who have no calling to pastor youth, but that's where you start in the church, and trying to lead young people to Christ and set them up for success in life is a real specialty, and it changes by age. That's why I asked you what age. What you do in one with one age is different with another. And I've found that, with some notable exceptions, most churches turn that over to youth pastors who are relatively inexperienced, and their heart really isn't in it. What they really want to do is become a senior pastor and work their way up. In short, they want to get work, keep their nose clean enough so that they can shed that job and go on to the next one. And, you know, in this day and age, that's kind of like using a GP for the most complex surgery. We've reached a point where we specialize a lot in medicine, and I think there's a lot of specialties in terms of ministering to different groups in our stratified society. And I think that's the reason why we have so many parachurch specialists. Young Life, that I've been involved with for years, is concentrated on a certain segment of youth, and that's high school. It's a critical age, and they got good at it over many years. And more recently, they've added another specialty, and that's called Wildlife, and that's for the middle schoolers. And that's very different from Young Life, but it works extremely well, and so that works well. We had the experience many years ago in my church where we had a Young Life leader, a very good one, and for some reason he became an assistant in our church. And so they made him youth pastor. And having been trained by Young Life, he was ministering to the high school kids and doing a good job. And the church had no understanding of what he was doing, and required that he be in his office for many hours a day when he really was needed to be in high schools hanging out and ministering to kids. And it just showed us the total misunderstanding of what the of what youth ministry consists of. The church had an idea that the youth minister was just an assistant to the pastor, and he was doing office work and assisting the pastor and running the church, which of course leaves no room for youth ministry. So, you know, you ask me a question about youth ministry, all I can do is share with you my experience over the years with youth ministry, what works and what doesn't.
So what works?
Well, as I say, it depends on the age, but the founder of Young Life had a saying that he stuck to all the way through and comes down to Young Life today, and that was, it's a sin to bore a kid. You got to get their interest. And with young people, what are you doing? You're essentially, you're educating. Well, our schools have been just as ineffective. They bore the kids. They come in there without a vision and a mission they don't motivate, and so nothing happens. The first thing you got to do in education is to motivate. The first thing you got to do in youth ministry is to motivate. And you got the motivation is different in different age groups, but it can be done.
So let me ask you a question on that. Like one of our clients, she went ahead and said to me, she said, you know, Mark, I'm not motivated. How would you recommend that I get motivated? And I'd never said it before. It was, you know, one of those God things. And I'm like, well, what's the upside of not being motivated? And she's like, I don't see any upside. I said, oh, no, there's an upside. She's like, okay, what is it? I said, it gives you a chance to exercise your discipline, to become disciplined. I mean, if you're motivated, you don't need discipline. But in life, you know, in life, there's a whole bunch of things that we're not motivated to do. And so if we're not motivated to do them, then we have to have discipline. So how do you agree with that or not?
Well, yeah, self-discipline is really the goal of education, because once you instill that, you remove most of the need for a teacher.
Right.
I mean, we don't even need libraries anymore. You go to your laptop and you've got all the education in the whole world, but without self-discipline and motivation, it's useless to you.
So how do you motivate kids and help them to have self-discipline simultaneously?
Well, it's a process, because there's group motivation. They want, first of all, kids want to have fun. And then they want to be recognized by their peers. So both of those things come into play. That's why games are important to children, because they are always competing for the recognition of their peers. But left to themselves, they often do it in destructive ways. Games and fun became a specialty in Young Life. I mean, they got books full of it, and you know, they do zany things, but guess what? Those zany things have been done for 40 years. They don't do them twice, but you know, the generations go along, and the kids all find them fun, and they laugh, and It breaks down barriers, and it promotes friendship, and they have a real talent from taking a crowd from the zany and the fun to the seriousness of who they are in this world and who they are in Christ. And you do it, it's subtly and by degrees, but every Young Life meeting ends up with a 10-minute talk, no more than that. And the talk starts very, very low scale and understandable, but then you always have the cross talk in the spring. And that has a purpose too. It leads to summer camp. If you can get them to go to summer camp, they have a week where they have the object is that they have the greatest time they've ever had in their life. It's memorable. And boy, the last day of camp is the crosstalk, and it's well planned, well executed, and to bring a guy into a position who's fairly new as a youth pastor and say, you're supposed to accomplish something like this. Hello? That don't work. The tools are out there, but I found that almost every church I know is scared to death of Young Life because it might lure their teens away from their youth ministry instead of saying, okay, you guys know how to do it. Let's kind of get together. Oh, no, it's a competitive thing, and that's why I've always kind of looked askance at most church youth ministries because they are counterproductive.
Yeah, wow, that opens up a whole Pandora's box. It's amazing. Do you think that pastors think of themselves as being very competitive?
Oh, the church is extremely competitive.
But do they see themselves as that?
And if you ask them, they'll immediately deny it, but look at their actions and you you see it.
Because, I mean, most of the parachurch organizations seem to me they're scared to death of the church, and they are very, very, very careful to not offend the church.
Well, you know, frankly, I think that maybe a senior pastor, when he takes the job, ought to follow the biblical principle. You remember the first requirements for a king when God set up a king for Israel? What was the first thing he had to do?
Boy, I don't remember.
He had to take writing tool and paper or whatever they had and write out in his own hand the law.
I didn't know that.
That's probably not Kings, but probably 2 Samuel or something like that.
Okay.
To write the law. Well, that would keep him out of mischief for a few days anyway. Rather than thinking that he was the law or he now was in charge and what had to be done was what he said, he was reminded that he wasn't the law. He's just the executive branch that administers the law, and the law is what God gave you. Now write it down so you know it, and then get busy performing it. It gave the king a sense of what he was there for, what the scope of his powers were, and what that he was representing God to the people and executing God's will. Well, I kind of think along those lines that a new pastor ought to sit down and take every program in the church that he wants to retain and sit down and write a mission statement and a vision for that program, what the outcomes are supposed to be. And I think you'd have a whole lot fewer useless programs that just go on because that's what we do. And I think, frankly, the youth pastor is one of those. If you don't know what you're doing, best you don't do it.
So if a pastor was listening to this, how do you think most pastors would, like, think about what you've shared today?
They'd probably say, oh, we're way too busy to do something like that. And the problem is, if you don't do something like that, then you wind up, like most pastors, beholden to the powers that be within the church, all of whom have their own agenda that may not have a vision attached to it. So if you don't write down the vision and the agenda for each of the areas under your command, then what you're going to do is just follow the politics of the church.
Oh, my gracious. All right, well, I'll take a hard right turn. And so I think I understand. I'm tracking that. I got a noodle on it a little bit, but I think I'm tracking it. So discipleship, if you're a parent discipling your children, how do you do that?
Well, see, that too, in this day and age, is very difficult, unless you're homeschooling or something like that. And even then, it's difficult because peer pressure is so strong that the peers can undo virtually everything you're doing. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It just means that it's very difficult. Now, having said that, it would kind of indicate that you need to start very early. I started when my kids were very young, and we had an hour together in the Bible and in foolishness every morning before breakfast. And it had to be fun. And so it wasn't Walk Through the Bible, but it was Bruce Wilkinson. Was it Bruce Wilkinson that did Bible summary teaching?
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And we just went through that, and it includes a lot of hand signs and so on and mnemonics to learn the outline of the Bible. And we made it a lot of fun. And so they knew, by the time they were old enough to think, they knew two things. One was the Bible was interesting and fun and very important to their dad. And that's about as far as you can go, I think. That starts the motivation. Otherwise, the first thing they hear about it, once they get with their peers in Sunday school and so on, is, oh, it's something we got to do on Sundays. We could be playing and it's boring, but we're forced to do this. And you got to get them motivated before they get demotivated. And then comes It's a Sin to Bore a Kid. Don't bore your kids in Sunday school. If it's not fun, don't do it. And fun is appropriate to the age. You know, some of the things they do in wildlife for the middle schoolers are just totally insane. But they're fun for them. They wouldn't be the same things you do for the high schoolers. But they do fun things.
So do you think it's biblical when you say it's a sin to bore a child? Do you think that's biblical based then?
Oh, yeah. You've got in Deuteronomy 4, I think, it says the important thing is to share your the Lord your God is one, and you will share that with your children as you walk in the way, as you live in the home, and so on. It's got to be part of life. So it's got to be done in a natural way as part of life. Well, fun is part of life.
Do you think Jesus had fun in growing up?
Oh, I'm sure he did. I think he had fun with the disciples, which if you said that today would be heresy, I suppose.
So is there biblical stuff? Is there stuff in the Bible that supports that, or?
No, because you have to think of the point of view. When you read each of the Gospels, you really have to think of the point of view of the writer. John, for instance, said the Lord did so many signs that if I were to write about them all, there would be no end to the writing. But I have chosen these so that you might believe and come to know Jesus. So in other words, he's saying quite frankly, I've been very selective in the material I use.
Right.
First of all, writing is difficult. I don't have a computer, and paper is expensive and so on. So I've got to make every word count here. So I would think that would preclude the possible pranks that the disciples played on each other. Boy, I mean, what if a bunch of young guys, and they were young guys, doing their wandering around the country?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had asked that from an intern we had in the company, and he was from Africa. And I had posed some type of question, and he said, Mark, kids, you know, it talks about the kids surrounding Jesus. And I'm like, okay, yeah. And he said, kids won't go to somebody that are not, you know, happy, that are not pleasant, that are not welcoming, that are not friendly.
Yeah.
But I've also often wondered, it talks about, I think it's in Proverbs where laughter is good medicine and stuff like that. But it seems like, I mean, with Jesus, it doesn't seem like, and it does, I mean, it's like, well, why isn't there, you know, why isn't there stuff about Jesus laughing, about having fun, having a good time? I mean, why, you know, joking around, why isn't that in there? I mean, well, not even some, because it doesn't seem like, I mean, he had fellowship, he connected, he had friendships and that kind of stuff, but it doesn't seem like there was a lot of joking around and goofing around and having fun.
Well, I chalk that up to the seriousness of the message. Remember, these people were being persecuted, and they had come to finally understand that the message that Jesus came to leave exclusively to them was life and death matter. deadly serious, and they really needed to get the essence across. And they weren't writing a novel, and they weren't writing how-to book. They were writing a message from Jesus to individuals on how to connect with Jesus and be saved. And to them, that was a pretty serious matter.
And I wonder how much, what if we were over in Africa or China or, you know, other places where there is oppression of Christians. I mean, you know, would there be, you know, so I don't know. I guess I have just a lot of questions. It's like, I mean, the reality, I'm pretty pragmatic, and I'm like, okay, I get the fun, and you can't bore them and stuff like that. But I'm like, when do you have the transition? Because I'm a business owner, and I get a lot of those in their 20s and 30s that they're expecting to come to work and have fun. And I think you can have fun at work, but it's got to be profitable. You got to learn how to produce, you know, something and have fun producing something. So I don't think that, you know, my five siblings, you know, we've talked about that quite a bit, and I don't think, like, we had fun growing up. We learned how to enjoy work and stuff, and I guess I was abnormal as a teenager. I'm like, okay, well, you know, work hard, save money as a teenager so you can pay for college, go to college, you know, get married, and then set up the rest of your life based on the foundation in high school rather than having a bunch of fun and have no foundation. But I think that's weird. I'm not saying I would expect that from others, but I see how I was positioned to be married at 20, buy a house at 21, 22. So I see how I was positioned for life, financially, work ethic, relationally, all of those type of things. And it seems like that a number of my seven kids and the general population are not positioned like that because they're having so much fun in junior high and high school. But I don't know.
Well, you know, part of the whole thing process is learning balance in your life. One of the most difficult things I run into in C-12 with the CEOs that I try to mentor is this balance, because owning a business can be a pretty strong taskmaster. And one of the biggest difficulties is letting it overwhelm you so that you lose the balance in your life. And, of course, that doesn't help. I ran a company for 20 years and was in a competitive industry and couldn't pay but so much, and a lot of my positions were entry-level stuff. But after we sold the company, and we were still having company reunions 10 years later, and people were coming from 500 miles around. And I said, well, you know why? And they said, you know, we've never made less money, but we've never had more fun. And so it was just a fun place to work, and people had a sense of humor, and we were just kind of a zany bunch, but we got the job done. And I think that's part and parcel. If you have to work hard and work long hours, you might as well cave into the reality that that's a major part of your life, and if that's not fun, your life probably isn't fun on balance.
That's awesome. As always, I appreciate you sharing. This is a new project. We're getting together on Mondays at 5 p.m. Central Time. And what we're looking at doing, and I'm going to include this recording in the project, and what we're looking at doing is getting out to, well, literally over 100,000 churches and inviting pastors and youth pastors and parents and, you know, to come in and have these type of honest conversations and then say, okay, you know, what do we do about it?
Good. Well, you'll get some good pushback on this.
Well, I don't know, you know. I think that's one of the things I'm looking forward to. I think you could tell me, you know, I'm 49, but I mean, like Tom Kuntz, most recent past president, Century 21, you know, he's in his mid-60s, and it's interesting to me, like when I hit 40, you know, I said, man, I wish I knew at 20 what I know at 40. That would be so, man, that would have made a big difference in my life. And I'm like, I bet you when I hit 60, I'm going to wish that I knew at 40 what I know at 60.
Well, keep working on it.
And so what I did is I kind of said, well, how do you know at 40, you know, what you wouldn't know until you're 60? And I'm like, well, just hang out with 60-year-old guys. I mean, they'll tell you.
You know the word rhema, I'm sure.
I've heard of it.
Okay. The word rhema applies to a passage in Scripture, which becomes internalized because of experience. You may have read it 100 times, you believe it, and you know, to some extent you understand it. But all of a sudden you have an experience, and it becomes part of your life, and you say, "Aha! Oh, that's what that means." And see, so it's not a matter of knowing at 20 what you know at 40. It's a matter of experience, and there's no way you can experience 40 years, nor would you want to in 20 years. You might know the same things, but you don't. They're not rhema to you.
See, it's so intriguing because, I set out on a path to get men in their 60s into my life, and I think it's made a tremendous difference in that. Like with Tom, like he speaks his mind, and maybe he always has. I don't know. I've known him for 6 years now. He speaks his mind, and it says, you know, he says, you know, Mark, as I get older, you know, I don't mind upsetting the apple cart as much. I mean, it's like, you know, here's what I've learned, and if you want to take it, take it, and if you don't, that's fine too. And so I think with, you know, your age, your wisdom, your experience, you've been in business, you've been a professor at a university, you know, you've had lots of experiences in a wide, you know, spectrum. I think that, you know, pastors and youth pastors and parents and teens, I think there is a desire out there to have input from individuals in your position, in your season of life.
Yeah, but it depends on the age. If you're a teenager, it's not cool to appear to learn anything because it just doesn't seem cool. And I can remember when my kids were teenagers, I'd tell them something profound, and they'd say, Daddy. and then a week later, I'd overhear them talking to a friend, saying the same words I had said to them, as though they really were meaningful. So, you know, it does sink in, and you got to share with them, but don't expect them to appear to appreciate it, because it's not cool.
Ralph, I appreciate our weekly sessions, your feedback, you know, your input. Great blessing, and appreciate you allowing me to record these and share these with other people. You know, the legacy that you're leaving, you know, through our conversations is impacting me, my children, and, you know, hopefully a whole bunch of other people all around the world. So I appreciate a great deal.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Thanks, Ralph.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you are listening to the rebroadcast of this, you have any questions, feel free to connect with the individual who invited you to participate in today's session, or you can call toll-free 888-230-2300. That's 888-230-2300. God bless, and have a great day. Bye-bye.